This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement, the podcast, as well as the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. I will give a very broad viewer discretion is advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing today, which involve conversion therapy, sexual abuse, and many other unhinged topics, because we love having the in-depth conversations and the unfiltered and unhinged conversations, because it is uncomfortable to talk about these issues and talk about, you know, these topics at hand. However, I feel it's deeply important to give a platform to others who do not reach the headlines. So again, viewer discretion is advised. Today, I am joined by a survivor, a catalyst for change, and somebody who I've been following on social media for the last couple of weeks. And I love the way that Ellen brings this approach to combating disinformation about what sexual abuse looks like, but also what conversion therapy looks like. So without further ado, Ellen, welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast.
Thanks, Zachary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And let's dive right in. And let's get started. Feel free to introduce who you are, what you do, and walk us through your journey. The floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, thank you. So I'm Ellen Teresa, and I'm an empowerment coach. I firmly believe that in this time, this crazy time on our planet, that people need to be empowered, that people need to know that they value, that they have worthiness. And so I'm an empowerment coach. I've written 4 books. They happen to be online. They're available on Amazon. Let me see what else about me. I also sometimes, and this has been something that's been developing over time, is I help a lot of people in the area of religious trauma. And that's people from all different types of religions, a lot from Christianity, but there's been a lot of other religions. And so I just believe that my life mission that is here is, even though I went through a lot of hell, there's a lot of light that can be given as well, and a lot of healing that can come to the planet as we share. And I'm just so thankful, Zachary, that you allowed me to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you bring a unique perspective. And what did conversion therapy look like for you? What did you experience? What did it, you know, what did it entail? You can go in as much detail or as little detail as you would like to with this, because I know that this is not an easy subject to talk about, but feel free to share your experiences and what it looked like for you, because each survivor has a different experience. Like mine specifically was with electroconvulsive therapy for 2.5 years, which was to associate my pain with my same-sex attraction. They sent me in a room in the basement of this church, and it was very dark, and they would show images on a screen, and if I was to get like aroused per se, or even like a video, it would send a shock throughout my entire body, and it would be attached to different parts of my body, so I would feel it throughout the entire thing. And again, the point of that was to associate my pain with my attraction. What did it look like for you?
Well, I'm going to actually have to backtrack, because I would say that conversion therapy started with me as a child. I was raised in a very strict, high-controlling Christian fundamentalist household. And that meant the Bible continually preached at and shoved down our throat. From the time I was the age of five, I was memorizing scripture. And the household itself was very heteronormative. So my dad was the breadwinner. My mom, you know, took care of us all at home. And it was just the way it was. I mean, my parents were in their 80s and 90s. And so you can imagine what it must have looked like. I was taught all the things that you were supposed to be as a woman, what that was supposed to look like. Sweet and gentle was the big thing that came across the board. I was to be in the kitchen. I was to be taking care of the home. And I was supposed to, you know, think that, you know, having children was a godly thing and a wonderful thing. And so I could see from the beginning of my being raised that my brothers, there was a lot of allowances for them to be however they wanted to be. But with me as the girl in the family, it wasn't that way. Like I had a specific way of doing things. I had to wear dresses. I had to conform, but I was very tomboyish, as I would use that term. And so I just didn't really like all the things that girls had. I liked to do other things, but that was not allowed in our home. And over time, my parents decided to adopt my sister, and my sister came into the house, and she had come with years and years and years of sexual abuse. And up to that point, we did not have that in our home. We had control. I wasn't allowed to maybe express emotions. I was not allowed to, you know, dress the way I wanted, do different things. I had to do basically what my parents told me to do. But we never had sexual abuse into the house until she came into the home. And she tore it from end to end, floor to floor, ceiling to ceiling, I always tell people, because she literally opened our home to a whole world that we didn't know was there. And so she just began the manipulations, and she began telling me subtly over and over and over, this family doesn't love you. They don't want you. They hate you. They're not going to be here for you. You're going to be shifted, blah, 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 blah. And she kept doing this over and over and over. So I was already feeling like, oh my gosh, like, am I going to be really accepted in this house? Like, she began to kind of break my foundations down to a point where it was like, I don't know if, you know, I'm going to be loved by them. Do they love me? And I began to question all of these things. And then the sexual abuse started with her. And it started out, you know, as molestation. She, you know, would do those type of things. Then she would have us, all of us siblings, and I had two older brothers at that point, and all of us siblings kind of took part in this game, and we would play spin the bottle. And she was basically breaking down all of our boundaries around sexuality, breaking down all of our boundaries around what was private. Our bodies were not our own. They were beginning to be everybody else's. And she just began this manipulation. Well, over time, this progressed even more, which only created more fear in my life. But she would always threaten, if you say anything to the parents, or you say anything to a pastor or anybody outside the home, you know, you're going to be in bigger trouble. So what did I do? I did what a lot of little girls do to be accepted. I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say anything. Soon the sexual abuse began to happen in other places. And one of the reasons I believe that this happened was because a door of vulnerability was opened. And I began to be vulnerable to all of the religious teachings that I had around women couldn't speak, your body is not your own, heteronormative things, the man is in charge, the woman is, you know, has to appeal to the man. And ultimately, the men made the rules, whether it was in church, whether it was in school, whether it was at home. That was how it was going. And so I had already learned very quickly that, oh, I must be a second class citizen because I'm a woman. And so as I began to get older and began to experience even other areas of sexual abuse from people in our neighborhood to different community people, I began to realize, okay, maybe this is what my whole life is about. Maybe I'm here just to serve the man. Maybe I'm not here to have a voice. Maybe this is just my lot in life. And my sister was very good at continually berating me with those type of lies that were going on. In the midst of all of that, I was also having these little feelings that I was different. And when I say different, I mean, I was a lesbian. I began to have little like inklings towards girls, but it was like a no-go zone. Like it was something we weren't allowed to talk about. And so I just kept those things to myself, and I like hid them. But as the abuse began to catapult and things began to get really out of control by different people in our town, lots and lots of different people, I ended up taking off. I was like, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm leaving the house. I can't handle this anymore. I'm getting the hell out. Now, I got the hell out for a variety of reasons. One, I thought I'm going to find freedom if I leave. And if I leave, I won't be told what I need to do. And I didn't want to be around anymore, all of that abuse. Like, I was like, this is horrible. I got to move. As I began to move, I thought, where am I going to go? So I went with some friends. I knew people were staying in this one in flat. So I went there and I stayed there. But little did I realize that this place that they were bringing me to was going to open me up even more to terrible, terrible forms of sexual abuse. And it was sex trafficking. I didn't know that at the time. I walked in on it. I thought, I'm away from my house. I'm doing my own thing now. Nobody can tell me what to do. And little by little, they began a whole different type of control and manipulation. This time they weren't using religion, using God, using scriptures. The other thing that was happening was they were saying, you're beautiful. Look at you. Everybody's going to love you. Everybody wants you. Like, you're just beautiful. Let's take a few pictures of you and we can show them to people. Well, I already felt, Zach, completely and totally like lost and abandoned and confused. And I just wanted that love and acceptance. So I was like, sure, you can take some pictures, no problem. So as they began to take pictures, it was like, oh, people are thinking I'm really nice looking. People like this. Oh, this is amazing. Little by little, it began to be more and more insidious. And soon it was like, hey, can you undress? Can you take off your clothes? Can you have these pictures like this? Can you sit like this? Can you stand like this? And soon I was being told not to wear dresses. Now I was being told not to wear anything. And this is exactly what we want you to do in that position. Now you can only imagine, okay, like you have to think about the levels of vulnerability that I had already. I already had this view that men were in charge and men were in control. So now I'm in a sex trafficking ring where the same thing is happening. Men are in charge, men are in control. And there were other girls that were participating in this too, and they were competing. So we were all competing against each other in this situation. The men loved it, thought it was great. And I began thinking, I am not supposed to be here either. This is not a good fit for me. This is not a safe place for me. I started continuing to have these attractions towards the girls that were there or different people I'd see walk by. I was like, oh, she's really pretty. But I kept it on a down low because I thought maybe this isn't acceptable in this like circle. But it turned out it was completely acceptable because the whole framework of this sex trafficking ring was pornography. And anything went when it came to pornography. So that meant, you know, women sleeping with women. It could be men with men. It could be threesomes, foursomes. You could have all sorts of different things happening. And I was realizing, oh my gosh, like there's no bars held here. Like this is totally accepted in this situation, but this is just equally abusive. I didn't know that still though. I was kind of like, this doesn't feel right. But I'm just going to kind of go with it because then I was, you know, able to experience, right? I was able to experiment with different things. I was able to, you know, kiss a girl if I wanted to, all of those things. But I did not know that what was happening was I was fracturing myself even more. There was a great splintering that began to happen within my mind. And I began to really disassociate and I could not at all like focus. Like I was losing whole pockets of the day as I was entertaining people, doing what they were telling me to do, doing these live pictures, doing these live thought shots. And it was just hell on earth. So again, I said to myself, I have got to get out of this situation because the more it went, the more I said no, the more it became yes, like you have to do this. And so what became wrong was now right. Right became wrong. And I lost complete of any sense of my humanity. That whole group was not about your humanity. But I also realized growing up, and I learned this in like hindsight years later after, you know, a lot of healing, that the religious upbringing that I was brought up with made me so vulnerable to being abused, made me so vulnerable to denying my identity as a lesbian, made me so vulnerable to the whims and fantasies of people around me. And it made me vulnerable to the fact that if God doesn't want me to be like this, then there must be something terribly wrong with me. Long story short, because this could go on for a long time, I ended up escaping from that pornography ring. And the way that it happened was a door was open. It was left open. I saw it. I couldn't believe it. I took the door. I opened it. I ran like a bat out of hell. I was running to get away from this situation. And I didn't know where I was going to run. I was just running. And the more I ran, the more I was feeling like it was almost kind of, I mean, if you were to say it was like an esoteric type of thing, I guess you could say this, but I felt like there was something that was helping me get out of that situation. But it wasn't just me getting out of that situation. It was where I ended up next. I went to the only place I knew, and that was the church. Now, I know that when people hear this, it can be like, wow, so you're going back to the church. Like, what are you doing? But I was still a teenager. I was only 19 years of age. I didn't know where to go. Where was I going to go? Was I going to go back home where there was abuse happening there in a different sort of fashion? Or am I going to go to the trafficking ring? That's the last place I want to go. So I went to where I thought I would be safe. And at least maybe they're not going to beat me up there. They may tell me I'm trash. They may tell me that, like, as a woman, you need to keep your mouth shut, but at least it's safer. So I ended up going and finding this like pastor. And this pastor knew my family, knew all of the stuff in, you know, the town. He knew a lot of different things. And he was like, yeah, I'll take you in. Like, no problem. We'll like help you out. But if you know anything about religious fundamentalism, the I help you will always have a clause and a disclaimer on the other side. I will help you as long as you continue to abide by XYZ. Now, this man was from the faith movement, and anybody knows about the faith movement. It was one of these movements that denied your emotions. You just relied on God. It was all faith, faith, faith. You weren't allowed to cry. You weren't allowed to get angry. You weren't allowed to do any of these things. And here I am going smack dab into this fellowship of people. Now, there were good things that he did. Some of the things he did was he helped me become functional. I was quite dysfunctional. I was coming off of drugs because I had been, had to take drugs when I was in the trafficking ring. He helped me eat properly because I had, had to keep a certain weight in the trafficking ring. And so he was like, you need to eat better. And so he did those type of things. He taught me, some good principles about, being a respectable human, not hurting people, integrity, some certain things like that. But he asked me this one moment, and I remember sitting in this man's office, and he said, "The Spirit of God is telling me, Ellen, that you have a lesbian spirit." Now, at that moment, my first thought was, shit, how did this guy know that like I had that, as he's calling it? How did he know that like I was a lesbian? I wasn't showing any signs of it. I wasn't doing anything like that. But he was also a social worker. So I don't believe necessarily that the Spirit of the Lord, quote, sorry if I'm offending people with that word, told him anything. I really think that he just picked up on it. I think he could pick up, he knew my background. Obviously, he kind of was trying to put two and two together in this picture. And I thought, oh my God, I can't tell him he's telling the truth here. So I just kept quiet. And as more went on, he began to show me these scriptures. Like it was like methodical. And it was like, let's look at the Roman 1 passage where it says that they exchanged their bodies for unnatural means. And he'd start teaching me these things about how like it's unnatural to have these attractions towards the same sex. It's unnatural. Pedophilia is unnatural. These things are unnatural. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, he's lumping pedophilia in with, my same sex attraction. He's lumping these things together. And he's saying to me, this is wrong. And he began to take me through Leviticus. And to be completely honest, I didn't see it coming. I didn't see what was happening because for the first time, nobody was laying hands on me anymore and like, beating me to a pulp, and nobody was sexually abusing me. And it was kind of like another perfect setup. My need for safety was the vulnerable piece that kept me completely locked in to hear what this man had to teach me. And he began to go on and on, scriptures. Then he had me read several books by different people who were gay and then now said they weren't gay. He sent me to Exodus International, to a variety of different conferences and groups. I did Living Waters, which was something back in the 90s, which was all about cleansing and deliverance. And he was sending me to these things. And he just said they would be good things for me to go to listen to. But what he was doing was he was planting these seeds already, compounding the unworthiness I had, compounding the self-hatred I had already. Every one of these conferences, every one of these sessions with Living Waters, every sexual brokenness group I went to in the city, all of these things were all pointing to the fact that my sexuality, how I felt about being a lesbian, was wrong. And there was nothing about that was right. It was wrong. And not only was it wrong, I was wrong. And so the shame that I felt, oh my God, I would read these scriptures over and over and just keep praying for hours. God, please take away these attractions I have to women. Please take away this. Please take away this. And I would do it for hours. And in the meantime, he'd be checking up on me all the time. He'd be like, hey, when was the last time you had an attraction towards a woman? And of course, if I said, it was yesterday or it was an hour ago, I'd be dragged right back into the office. He would open the Bible. He even set the Bible at one point on my head. And he said, you have the mind of Christ, and the mind of Christ is not women with women. It is men and women. That is it. That it is, everything. And he would push this Bible on top of my forehead. And then there was another church that I went to because he was like, you need more help. So he sent me to another church. And what they had me do was they had me stand in this circle of people, and I had to repeat after them these scriptures, but I had to repeat the scripture as though I was the one who was in the scripture. So if it said something to the effect of, like in Romans 1, where it says like, and men exchanged, natural relations for the unnatural, I would have to say, well, Ellen, I exchanged XYZ. And they would keep doing this. And then I had to write these affirmations over and over and over. And I had to repeat them over and over and over. And it was like a drill. And they would just keep hammering it to me and hammer it to me. And then I'd get these phone calls from different pastors and from different people in the, that were elders who knew what was happening. They would call me and say, have you said your affirmations today? Have you had an attraction today? Are you masturbating? That was the other thing that they kept hammering all the time. And they were just like, you're not supposed to be doing that either. And that lesbianism is just glorified masturbation. That's what they use. That was the term, analogy that they used for a loving relationship between two women, is just glorified masturbation. So you can only imagine, okay, what I was feeling like through this. It was torture. And I wept for days. I mean, they would literally try to get me into this state where I had to cry. And I remember this one church I was in, and everybody was putting pressure, and they're like, and we are, getting rid of the demon of lesbianism. And I was just so tired, and I was so hurt and feeling so battered that I just cried. And they thought, oh, she's, being delivered from this demon. She's repenting. She's saying that she's sorry. No, what really was happening was I was exhausted. I was exhausted being told that I had to read these scriptures every day, that I had to say them this way, that I had to show up for counseling at the right time. And I had to tell everything. And I had to journal every time I had an attraction. I mean, it was ridiculous. And so the more this went on, the more I began to realize, okay, I am in the church. And I, by that point, I was wanting to serve in the church. It was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't want to leave the church, because if I leave the church, where am I going to go? What's going to happen? Who's going to take care of me? So I continued in this for a while. And then while I was a worship leader, I remember this woman. She walked through the back doors, because the doors kind of opened, and I'm worship leading. And she comes in the door and she sits down, and I immediately had all of these attractions for her. And in fact, so much so that I missed part of the piano playing that I was doing and played the incorrect note. And I mean, I can laugh about it now, but it was because I was like, wow, this woman's so beautiful. I want to get to know her. And little by little, we started to get to know each other. And I thought, oh my God. And, you know, I'm thinking, I probably want to have like a relationship with this woman. This is kind of what's going to happen. And I did. I was sitting with her in a parking lot, and she gave me a kiss. And I suddenly was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is wonderful. But now what do? I'm a worship leader in the church. I'm doing different ministries. I was part of an outreach group for the homeless. What do I do with this now? How is this going to take place? And so the only thing I knew to do was to be really honest with that pastor and come forward and say it. But that in itself, even when I look back in hindsight on that, Zach, is I was groomed as a child to repent over things. Like I was groomed as a child to ask for forgiveness where I didn't even need forgiveness. Where, you know, and if somebody had done something to me, I was always the one going, I'm sorry, I must be at fault. And so I kind of took that same type of stuff and I took it into the office and I said, I'm in a relationship with this woman. And the pastor said, well, you can't do that. And I said, well, I am. And he said, well, then you have to step down. And it was not just a quiet step down. It was a public humiliation of a step down. And I remember saying to him, as he said, okay, you're going to step down. And then this Wednesday at the church service, I'm going to have you come forward. We're going to stand. You're going to tell the congregation what you have done. And then, you know, you're going to be gone. And I remember asking the pastor, I said, why do I have to do it that way? And here's what he said to me. He said, Ellen, if you had done this sin in private, and I said, well, what do you mean sin? But, you know, we had that whole conversation. But he said, if you had done this, if you had kissed this woman in private, and I said, well, nobody was around. Nobody saw him. And he said, you are a leader in the public. And so because you're a public leader, you must be publicly scolded. You must be publicly disciplined because you're a leader with public influence. So the following Wednesday, I went forward with him. And he took me up and he had this very sad look and this very sad face. And he had me face the entire congregation. And I had to spell out, as he asked me questions, what happened, who it was with, and how I feel about it. And what about the scriptures? And he began this public berating of me in front of the entire church. The humiliation, the look of horror by people was absolutely unbelievable. People walked out. People literally would turn their back in the pew as I was talking as a way of saying, we disagree with what you did, Ellen. You were wrong. And then they cheered the pastor. I remember he said, okay, because of this, she's going to be let go. And Ellen, you can leave now. And so I walked down the aisle, talk about a long aisle. I walked all the way down out the doors and I left. As I was doing that, people were clapping. People were clapping that the pastor had done what he did. They were cheering. They were saying the righteousness of the Lord is here. And then there were people praying in tongues loudly as I went by them, trying to cast out whatever they were trying to cast out. And all of this stuff. And I left. And I left that church for 4 years, well, 4.5. I ended up being in a civil union with that woman. And what was interesting with that whole relational piece was I had so much stuff in my head about how wrong this was. The relationship I was in with that woman was a disaster. It was because I kept feeling these levels of shame. And, you know, and I just, every time we'd engage in something or we would be together, I would be like, I just feel like this is wrong. This isn't right. And she would be like, that's the church teaching you. That's a man telling you what you're supposed to be. And I just couldn't I couldn't see it. Like I ended up leaving that relationship because I could not reconcile that God was okay with this. And that's the brainwashing that happens with conversion therapy. It strips you and it takes you out of your sovereignty, out of your autonomy, and says, well, you are over here, you're doing this. It's all behavior driven. Everything is behavior driven. And this behavior is unacceptable. You're unacceptable. Therefore, God has rejected you. And the church has rejected you. And it removed any type of critical thinking in me. And I still had so much, I had such a lack of healing in my life that all I wanted to do was I just wanted to feel normal. I just wanted to feel accepted without all these behavioral clauses. So what did I end up doing after 4.5 years? I left that woman. And I hobbled my little self back to that same church. And this is the twistedness. When you look at religion, you look at conversion therapy, you look at the control and the manipulation. They made me literally, and in some ways I would say I gave my will as well, but there was such a codependency I had on the institution that I couldn't just live by myself and do my own thing. I had to return back to the church. So I went back to the church at the joy of the intercessory team. I told the pastor I left. And so then it became public again. I had to then stand in front of the church and I had to tell everybody about my public repentance. I had to do the 4 spiritual laws, the Roman road, if you're familiar with that, you know, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And I had to confess this in front of the entire congregation. And they, you know, they reinstated me, right? They let me right back into the church once I conformed. And everything looked like it was going just fine. You know, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm back in this place. I feel at peace. But I really wasn't at peace. Inside, I knew that I was not living as myself, but I didn't also at the exact same time, because there was this underlying pressure that was happening. And I was a school teacher at the time, and I saw, you know, lesbian teachers, and I was talking to different people, and I was doing all sorts of things. But I needed the acceptance of that church because my family wasn't around. And it was like, I need that church. So for the next, I want to say it was about 16 years, 17 years, I shoved down with everything in me to the point where it's like I almost forgot it was that I was a lesbian. I pushed it and denied it and shoved it down with affirmations, with healing prayers, with this, that, and the other. And it almost, and I always tell people this, that it had me so confused that who I really was, I couldn't even get there anymore. I couldn't find it. It was buried over and glossed over and painted over and boarded over that I was a lesbian. And I couldn't even feel it in my eyes. I couldn't feel it in my ears. I couldn't feel it in my body. I had completely and totally and utterly disassociated from that. And as I, you know, came back to that church, I ended up going through a very extensive healing process. And that, you know, when you stop and you look at this healing process, there is an incredible power to what had happened in this process, because there were areas of sexual abuse that were overcome. And I was, you know, I was able to forgive the perpetrators that had hurt me. I was able to forgive myself. I was able to reconcile situations with my parents. I was even able to reconcile certain situations with biblical passages. But the area that never got sorted was the area that I'm a lesbian. And the woman that was doing all the counseling, I mean, bless her heart. She, you know, I mean, she was an amazing woman and did some really great stuff to help me overcome some of the areas of abuse that I went through. But she was emphatic about lesbianism being wrong and a sin and a disgrace unto the Lord. And so while I was healing on one side, I was not healing on another side, because she would just continue to break me in that area. And that had its own unique swing to it. I would say that it would be the another version of conversion therapy that she kind of created on her own. But we would be in, we would go to like the woods and we'd pick up a stick and I could hit a tree with it, you know, if I had a thought or I had a feeling or whatever. And I remember like when I had a thought about a woman or something like that, I would say, oh, I have a thought about a woman. She'd be like, take the stick, hit the tree. So I take the stick, but you couldn't just tap the tree. I mean, you had to really haul off and hit it. And if you know anything about taking a stick and hitting a tree, it can bloody your hands. It can, you know, bring bruises on your hands. And those bruises and the things that I had on my hands were all remembrances of the fact that this wasn't right. This was not something that I was supposed to do. This was all wrong. Oh my God, I'm in this situation. And so I was in healing with her for, I want to say it was about 5 years. I think it was five. And real powerful things happened there. I will say that she was a Christian. She, you know, did bring about gentleness in me. And there was a lot of really powerful things. My mind was put back together in different sessions. And there were some really beautiful things, but this area never got situated. And after time, I decided I wanted to leave teaching and I wanted to go to the mission field. Now, little did I know that my reason, one of the reasons I would say, to go to the mission field was so I could get the hell out of the US and away from everybody I knew. Now, I didn't know that necessarily consciously, but I think subconsciously, there was a part of me leaving so that I could go away, be in these other countries. Nobody needs to know what I'm doing and I'm going to be over there. So I went and I joined different organizations. I was in YWAM for a little bit. I did some things with Christian International. I did all sorts of different things. And every time you're in those type of mission organizations, there are questions that come up around sexuality and like, you know, are you have to be heteronormative, right? And again, I would just put on the paper, yeah, I'm a woman and I have attractions to men and yada, yada. And inside, as I was on the mission field, this is where the unraveling began to happen around my sexuality. Because as long as I was in the US, as long as there was a real polarized narrative that was coming to me, whether it was be politics, like right now with Christian nationalism, I was a Christian nationalist. That was a big thing. You know, you were taking US for God. So I had to get out of that in order for me to see a completely different way of being, living, breathing, doing something different. So I was in like real crazy nations. And nations where there was extreme violence and child soldiers. I was helping to rescue girls from sex trafficking, helping restore them with the areas of abuse they went through. And the whole time in the back of my head, the attractions for women began to slowly come back. I had buried them in the US, but now I'm way over in another place, in another energy, in a different type of work. And now it's all starting to come again. And I remember we'd do this incredible outreach. We'd go down, we'd rescue these girls, we'd bring them out. And then I would be spent repenting for, you know, the rest of the night because, I saw somebody in my hotel that I thought was attractive. So then I would be like, oh, I can't do that. And I begin confessing the scriptures and who I am in Christ. And, you know, I'd be saying over and over and over all these things. And in the meantime, what I think was happening, if I look at it in hindsight, was all the barriers and the control mechanisms that were around me were uprooted. Even though I was in mission organizations and couldn't say that I was gay, what was happening on a private level with me was I was starting to read other books, starting to explore more progressive mindsets, started to focus in on that maybe this is how I was created. And so I started reading these books by different people, you know, about they were being gay and, you know, now that they felt like God had created them that way. And I thought, oh my God, this is such an, you know, institution. Wow, this is incredible. Then I would go into the church services and I'd go into all these other things and I would just play the game. I would play the game. And while I was on the mission field, I ended up marrying a man because this man approached me. Long story short, he proposed to me. And, you know, you got the good graces of my family back. I had the good graces of the church. But the true story was I couldn't fake it any longer. There was only so far I could run from this situation. And so in my marriage to him, it was a complete disaster. It lasted only 9 months. We didn't even consummate the marriage because I didn't even want to be involved in that. I was so uninterested in having sexual relationships with a man. Like I was just so uninterested. And so I divorced, which was the next cardinal sin. You know, I had never seen religious spirits like that before that came out of the woodwork when I divorced. That was a no-no. That was, you know, my family was going to run the other direction because they didn't want to associate now with a divorced woman. And what was actually happening to me was I was starting to get my legs back. I was starting to get my heart turning towards my sovereignty instead of constantly being controlled and pushed down by men, but by an institution, even by God, you know, the view of God they taught me. It was just like, oh my God. So here I was, I was in England doing some missionary work, and it all completely came down with a crash. And I really began to like women all around me. I would be looking at, you know, women while walking down the street. There was something about their boots. There was something about England. There was something about the freedom that I felt in the people here. And it was, you know, it was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And, you know, I wrestled with a lot of it for gosh, a long time until I ended up leaving the mission field. Like it all hit in 2020 and I left the field. And I left the field a completely and totally different human. I left very exhausted and tired because the church didn't take care of me like they could have. And even when I was following all the rules, they weren't taking care of me. But then when I really didn't follow the rules, we were really pushed aside. I didn't have any relationships with women on the mission field, but I wanted to. I wanted to experiment with that. I wanted to see what that would look like. And so 2020 hit, and it was like the joy of my life because I had to leave. I had to leave from where I was stationed overseas and I had to come back to the US. And I came back to the US and lived with a friend. And that's where I began to really experiment. I looked up dating apps. You know, I mean, gosh, I was raised in purity culture. So this was like not the way you go about trying to, you know, find someone was using a dating app. But I was on dating apps. I, you know, dated a woman. Then there was a woman near me who I had met and she was gay. And so we ended up going out for a while. And as I began to do that, I began to ask myself, is God going to strike me down? Like if I start dating women, is God going to strike me down? Now, here I am. I still have that religious conditioning that God is going to take a lightning bolt and he, like Zeus did, and just send it down from Mount Olympus and it's going to zap me right then and there. And I was sure that that was going to happen. It never happened, Zach. It never happened. I was never blasted by God. I was also never blasted really by the church. There was disapproval. People that I knew in my sphere of friends who left, they all left. They, you know, didn't want to have anything to do with me at that point. I was also deconstructing my faith. So I was coming against different things about hell, coming against different things, you know, all the clobber passages that they use, you know, to try to oppress and suppress the LGBTQ plus. Like I was coming against all those and I had really good arguments for them. And I had real good testimony and real reasons why I felt like, no, I know I'm created this way. And the more I continued to do it, the more I began to realize the freedom in it, the joy in it, the things that I'm feeling in it. And you know, right now where I sit, because I live in England right now, and that's where I am, and that's where my partner is, and she's amazing, and we're getting married next year, and it feels so good to be in my own skin. But there is such a difference between the United States, and sometimes it can feel like the rest of the world. It feels like the United States can be so in the, not only in the dark ages, but like way back in, like, you know, at the very beginning, like, the old, you know, I don't know what you call those. What do you call those? Those old, oh gosh. Well, going way, 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 way back. We'll just say that at the beginning of time. And it just feels like America is so behind the times. And as I see, you know, the difference between here and there, all countries have issues. All countries have different things. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But living here in England is a marked difference than living in the US. So for example, when I was dating women in the US, we could not hold hands in public because people were looking at us. They were tisking at us. They were, you know, mocking. I mean, some people would yell scriptures. You know, all this like crazy shit would go down when I was just holding a person's hand. I mean, for all they knew, it could have been just my sister. I mean, like, what in the world did it have to be? But they would, you know, come at me. But here in England, my gosh, I can walk down the street holding my girlfriend's hand, who's now my fiance. I can kiss her in public. I can put my arm around her. I can tell people that I'm in a relationship and nobody looks at me with two heads. That does not mean that there are not people here who have issues, but in general, around the LGBTQ+, it is much more advanced and far, way far ahead here than the US is. Nobody is telling me, you know, using scriptures and standing out with picket signs on a Sunday morning to say that, you know, faggots aren't welcome here. That happened to me. I had that happen in the US, but it doesn't happen here. Not every church here is for the LGBTQ+. They can say they're inclusive. They may not be always affirming, but there is a whole hell of a lot more affirming here than I have ever felt in my life. It's like my whole heart is at peace. My whole heart is at rest. And when I met my girlfriend, she had no religious upbringing. She had nothing of a background like that, like I came from. And so in her eyes, it was like completely ludicrous. Like, what? You mean you can't have a girlfriend? You're kicked out of church? Like you have to read scriptures over and over? You mean what, they're gonna shame you? Like, you know, like all of these things that I went through. And literally, I mean, those type of things I went through as I would, you know, unpack it was like, I mean, I would be so vomiting after those sessions with conversion therapy because it was just all wrong. I mean, it was just evil. It was really twisted. So I would be telling her about these things and it was just like so foreign to her. It was just like, you know, she came out early in her life and there was no ramifications for it. Nobody was judging her. Nobody was putting her down. Nobody was, you know, saying, and if they were, they don't say it. It's like illegal here. It's illegal to make statements towards the LGBTQ+. It's illegal. You can be arrested for that. And I always think to myself, wow, if only America had that. Like, could you imagine if America was rounding up people because they were saying that members of the LGBTQ community, you know, are XYZ, and they get arrested for that? They get fined for that? They can spend a night in jail for that? I mean, that's unheard of in America, but it's not unheard of here. And so I think I know where I am right now. I know where I'm living is the right place. I know that as I continue to walk this out, more and more religion is being shredded by the minute underneath my feet. More and more of that stuff, the control, the manipulation, the coercion is going out of me. But in the early stages of a relationship, I really had a hard time with a lot of things. I was totally and completely still living in the past. It was like the US had followed me, but the US hadn't followed me. What had happened was all that religious garbage had gotten into my mind and had gotten into my heart. And I had to go through a cleansing. Like, and the cleansing for me is living out loud. The cleansing for me is walking as a healed human being in my sovereignty as a woman, as a lesbian woman in a nation where I'm not judged and ridiculed and put down because I'm this, because I'm in a relationship with a woman. That to me is the power. That's the healing. That's the peace that blows away anything that has happened in my life. I think one of the greatest weapons, if you want to use that term, that I can use against Christian fundamentalism and what had happened to me was living free, living whole. And what's sad is all the people in the background who helped bring me to different levels of healing, they don't realize that actually they were catalysts to who I am right now. Like they helped me get to where I am right now. Are they in agreement with where I am? Not at all. Do they think I've lost my healing? Absolutely. But I know, and my fiance knows, and the people who know me closest say that there is joy on my face, and there is a renewed breath in me, and there's a heart that is loving people, and there's a heart that is able to just move forward. And I think that that's the piece that I just wish America would just move forward. Holding people and telling them that they are worthless, telling them when they have a sexual attraction and you get hit with the Bible over the head is not the right way to treat people. That's not God's love. And I'm not, you know, and I use God in a different way than what I was raised. I see God as, you know, energy and big, but that's not the energy of God. What's happening in America is not the energy of healing and hope and you know, equality and justice. None of that. None of that. What is happening right now with Trump and Christian nationalism and even this whole Charlie Kirk and a martyr thing. Okay, none of that is an example of God. None of that is what Jesus would be doing on the planet. Jesus would be sitting with all the marginalized. Jesus would be going to the court systems that are happening soon and would be sitting in there with them and would be like the greatest attorney ever and saying, I'm sorry, but we need to really listen to these people's story here. Like, come on, like, let's listen. Let's not just, you know, do what the president tells you to do. Let's not just keep living under this Christian religion. I mean, Jesus would not be doing what we're seeing happen in a lot of the corners and the churches and all the shit that's happening in America. He's not for that. He's not present in that. That's not where it's at. And so I know I'm going on here for a long time, but I have to say that My yesterday is history, because now I move forward in the future. And the future for me is living free, living as a sovereign being, living with the woman I love, hugging her, kissing her, showing displays of affection without shame, without shame. I remember, you know, kissing her early on, and I felt all the shame, and it would like try to creep up and gather around me. And she just put that to rest. She's like, no, that's no. And thank goodness for her, because she has, you know, stayed it out with me. So it's a powerful time in my life. And I guess I just really want, I guess what I'm saying by being on this podcast is that healing is possible. You can get past the story. You can overcome it. And for me, it's a day by day thing. There are some things no longer affect me. And then sometimes there's little inklings of things that try to come, these little religious, you know, persuasions trying to gather in my head. But I put it to rest and I say, no, I've been created by love. I'm from love. Every single LGBTQ person out there who is in the community, you were created with love. You were created from love. You were created by love. Who you are is love. Who you are is worthy. Who you are is kindness. And oh my gosh, just who you are is beautiful and altogether lovely. And I am hoping that something will give and break in America. I'm hoping that, because it's just so backwards. It's so old school. It's just not there. And when I hear that people aren't going to church, I get excited. When I hear that people are waking up and there's even progressive pastors that are coming forward, you know, and are trying to do their part and trying to fight on behalf of the LGBTQ plus, I'm happy for that, because that means that the more we do that, the more we keep that momentum going, the more people that share their stories, the more people that keep saying, this is what happened to me, but this is where you can go. You don't have to stay back there. You can move forward. The more people that gather with this voice, this like rise above justice movement that you have going on, Zach, the empowering, the inspiring, the leading piece that you have, we can flip the times. We can change it. I want to see my friends in America walk down the street without shame, without fear. I don't have fear here. I'm not afraid to publicly display my affection. I want that for America. That's just being human. I mean, if we break it down to those bits right there, humanity, that's all it is. It comes down to being human. That's what it is. It comes down to just knowing your worth as a human being. You're allowed to breathe. You're allowed to love. You're allowed to be safe. You're allowed to have belonging. You're allowed to be accepted. Those are all inalienable rights of being human. And when somebody denies you of that humanity, because that's what happened to me. A lot of my humanity had been stripped until I had gone through the healing process. When that humanity is taken from someone, and they are told that they are less than, where is the love in that? Everybody can preach God is love, and you know, churches can do this, and they say God is love, God is love, God is love. Where is love in that? When you're telling someone that they are less than, and they are a nobody, and you're not welcome here, and you got to sit down, and you're anointed one Sunday, but now that you've come out, you're not anointed anymore. Where is the love in that? Where is humanity in that? Where is grace in that? Where's the gospel in that? I mean, if we really want to get technical, where's the gospel in that? Because that is not causing people to rise. That is causing people to be buried, to be silenced, to be oppressed, to be demeaned. That's not people's birthright. And if I have to say it over and over and over, the one thing I know, my birthright is safety. My birthright is love. My birthright is companionship and a place for belonging. My birthright is a wholesome community. These are the birthrights, and people are trying to take the birthrights away. Christian nationalism is trying to take the rights of humans. But we all know that if the table were turned and somebody was going to these heterosexual relationships and arresting people and trying to put them through some sort of conversion therapy, it would be a no-go zone. It would be like, who the hell are you? You're not doing that to us. Exactly. So why is it being done to us? Why is the defaming, the dehumanizing, the bashing of people, why are we allowing that? So I guess, Zach, in this long-winded speech that I've done on this little podcast, is to just say that if I can get out, if I can find healing, if I can live sovereign, if I can move forward, if I can share my voice openly and publicly right now over the airwaves without shame, without guilt, without terror, without fear, but standing loudly declaring that I am whole, then so can someone else. Because this just isn't for me. It's not just for Ellen to experience this level. It's for everybody. It is part of being human. This is your birthright, damn it. Your birthright is wholeness. Who you are is whole. Who you are is whole. And I know it's scary. And I know it's like, you know, the oppression in America is so heavy, and there's so much, you know, negativity, and there's so much polarization, but you are still worthy underneath the polarization. You still have power underneath the polarization. You can rise. You can come forward. You can step up. You can be empowered. And I really believe that victimization is not the birthright of people. We are not called to be victims. We are not. And if we have to, you know, stand up in court and say our bit, then we do that. If we have to stand on the picketing line to come against what's happening in America or wherever in the world, then we do that. Then we do that because that's our birthright. We are allowed to do that at the risk. I know it's at the risk. Okay. I know it's at the risk of being arrested and being put in prison and all of that. But there are more of us than there are of the government. There are more of us than one Donald Trump. There are more in America that just need to keep locking arms. Don't let fear, don't let terror hold you back and put you into freeze mode where you don't move at all. See, I had to move. I had to literally take steps to find my freedom. But other people can take steps too. You can find your freedom. You can find where that door is. There is a community for you. There is love available to you. There is peace available to you. There is hope available to you. It is yours. It's your birthright. It is the I am you. So when you say, I am so-and-so, or I say, I am Ellen, what does that mean? I am Ellen who's free, who's going to live not anymore chained and held and constrained and oppressed and suppressed. And it's just not going to happen. It doesn't come near me. My boundaries are too strong now. And I believe with everything in me that the same thing can happen in America. I believe that people's boundaries are going to start getting set just by listening to this podcast, just by listening to this message. There's going to be a, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because that's what had to happen to me. No, I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to succumb to this. No, I'm going to stand up before the Supreme Court on Tuesday and I'm going to say what I need to say. Yes, I'm going to do it. Yes, I'm going to take the risk, because the more we take the risk, the more we build resilience, and the more we build resilience, we rip apart that Christian nationalism. So we rise, we gain resilience, and then we rip it apart. And then we build it again. Then we build with love. Then we find healing. I encourage people to find places that you can have healing. It can be a community, it can be a hotline, it can be listening to messages that like this one, or listening to people's stories, it can be reading books. But there are ways to empower yourself. They're there. And I know as you shift your perspective from victim to victor, it's all gonna shift, because you were not created to be a victim. I wasn't. Zach wasn't. Nobody is. There's not to be winners and losers. We're all winners. We're all overcomers. And sometimes it's hard to see that. And I know that. And I know it's hard to see it. I know that sometimes it's like, damn it, Ellen, every step I take, I feel like 100 times I'm going backwards. I've been there. I have gone backwards. I have returned to places of oppression because I didn't know what to do. But then when you return, you're like, you have different eyes, right? You see it differently. You're hearing it differently. And you respond differently. And it's like, whoa, I can't do this anymore. So you then leave again. And it doesn't matter how many times you go back. It doesn't matter how many times the religious shit and the jargon keeps going on in your brain. It doesn't matter how many times. You're still damn worthy. And you're worthy of love, and you're worthy of acceptance. And you're worthy, 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 worthy. I don't care what Bible verses you've learned. I don't care what congregations you've been in. You still are precious and loved and chosen and accepted. And oh, these are your birthrights. These are the frameworks with which you were created. And there is no LGBTQ+ person out there at all. There is no human anywhere that does not deserve love and kindness and compassion. And that is the peace I want you to know, that you're so loved. You're so loved. You're so worthy. And you're created to hold your head high. You're created to live free. You're created to smile, to laugh, to be at peace, to be at rest in who you are. You were created for that. And everything else is just a bunch of lies. It's all lies. It's all lies trying to keep you down. But you can heal. I know that. And you can walk confidently ahead. And I know that too. And I know that that takes a whole hell of a lot of courage. And I know I don't know you. I'm talking to people. I don't know your stories. I don't know them. But I know this, that you were created from love, which means you're love. And you were created from goodness, which means you're good. You have not failed because you're gay. You're not failed because you're trans. You've not failed because you're lesbian or bisexual or the many different alphabet in the community. I don't know all of them, but none of you are a failure because you're trying to live out your truth. Living out your truth is not failure. It's not weakness. It's powerful. We have too much fakeness in our world. But you are real. When you go to those pride events and you dance with all your might and you're laughing and singing and doing all of those things, that's not failure. That's a reclaiming. You're doing a reclamation there. I went to a pride event here and I remember tearing up as I watched the event, and I was kind of in the parade as well, because people were genuinely free and laughing, and there was joy, and the streets were lined with people, you know, waving. And I mean, even the cop cars were LGBTQ. I mean, they were rainbow colored. I mean, it was like, it was the most incredible thing, but it brought tears to me because I know that in America, it's a different story. But I know that that can be an old story. It doesn't have to be the same story. And you don't have to carry the story of America into your future. You don't. I don't. So yes, may your spirit be freed so you can dance with life. So you can dance as your authentic being. So you can dance with color and vibrancy and shine and a laughing in your face and a glee in your eyes. May you dance with childlike innocence. Because that, my friends, is that's your inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Ellen, yeah. I just want to say that I felt every single word of everything that you just said, and it literally is the contradictory to what I heard whenever I was going through what I was going through. And I know for a fact that if I would have had, outside of my mom, you know, full disclaimer, my mom's been my rock, but if I would have had somebody else just tell me exactly what you just said, I think the course of my life would have been completely different. But what matters is hearing it now. And yes, today is Sunday. You know, it's a day that has always had a different meaning to me, because it's, you know, it's a day of rest. It's a day of, you know, a day of resistance, because rest, as we know, is resistance. But it's also a day that it just has a different meaning, because every Sunday I used to go to church, but it wasn't the church that a lot of other people went to. It was a church that I knew, okay, I always dreaded walking through the doors, because I know I'm going to go downstairs into a room and I'm going to be subjected to this barbaric, horrific,
yes,
quote unquote, practice, even though it's not an actual practice. But I always knew that I was walking right back into it, because I was forced to believe that society needed me to change. And I always thought, like, well, if I'm going to be LGBTQ and I'm going to be sexually assaulted, because we know that LGBTQ people are more at risk of being victims of crime and being, you know, sexually assaulted, or unfortunately worse, why would I continue to subject myself to that? Why would I do that? And then learning about the stories like Matthew Shepard, he was a 21-year-old gay student that was brutally beaten and left for dead in Laramie, Wyoming. Fast forward to 2016, I won the Spirit of Matthew Award from the Matthew Shepard Foundation. Hearing and being introduced by Dennis Shepard, Matthew Shepard's father, and presenting the award to me, it was like a full circle moment because I learned about Matthew Shepard at a young age. I heard friends talking about it in school, and I remember, I remember being young, and I was like, oh, this boy's really cute in my class, and going into the locker room. Like, it's just your natural instinct just to look down. But you hear these conversations and they're like, oh, you're a fag, or you're this, or you're that. And there's only so many times that you can hear something before you begin to believe it. And I didn't believe it because I didn't understand it, because I didn't know what the fuck it was. And,
Exactly.
they would be sitting here and they would be talking about how big their penis is, or who has the bigger balls or whatever. And it's like, everything that you're doing is literally what you just told me that I can't do, but it's okay for you to do it. It's okay for you to sit here and talk about drugging your girlfriend and God knows what's going to happen to her. Like, that's okay, but I can't be who I want to be because you say that it's wrong. How is that fair? How is that right? How is that fair? How is that right? How is that anything? And on April 10th of 2019, I wrote a letter to my 4-year-old self, and I'm going to read that. Dear Zachary, growing up is going to be a challenge, but with the right people and the right support, you will be able to overcome anything that is thrown at you. You are beautiful. You are worth the life you are going to live. No one can erase you nor stop you from achieving your life goals. You will go through loss and heartbreak after losing your first crush, and you will be a role model to so many. You have the world at your fingertips, and your mind is the oyster that controls your future. You can do anything you set your mind to do, and you will exceed the expectations that everyone holds you to. Be yourself, love yourself before you love anyone else, and devote your life to creating a future world that generations past you will be able to build on. Sincerely, me. I wrote this because I was told literally right before that my life did not matter. That what I went through, I absolutely deserve, and I should have been dead. That is in response to the person and to the people who have ever doubted me. Those are to the people within my own family that said I was going to be nothing. That is to my biological father, who is now sitting in prison, that I never met a day in my life. To his family, saying I was nothing but a bastard because he didn't want to accept the responsibility of being a father. Why is that my fault? How is that my fault? Because it's not. I'm reclaiming my voice. I'm reclaiming my truth. I'm reclaiming what was taken away from me at a very young age. That I should have been focused on school, but what was I focused on? Trying to get the police department that is to serve and to protect in my community to understand what I went through and to be there for me. And for them to sit there and say that I do not believe you, why didn't you just fight off your rapist? Why didn't you just say no? Why the fuck do you think I'm here trying to report? Because I was told that, oh, you can just go to the police department. You can just report. No. And what we see on TV with special victims unit, they make it look like you can just walk in and say, I was raped. They take you into this
Oh,
room and they
no,
just believe you. It's
right,
so
right.
dramatized. Do not get me wrong. I love true crime. I love SVU. I love sitting here watching Olivia Benson try to crack these cases. If we had Olivia Bensons in our local police departments, none of this would have happened. None of these stories, these countless and endless stories that I am hearing, and I am hearing very detrimental stories that, you know, there's very heavy trigger warnings on some of our future podcast recordings, because they go deep into the criminal justice system and what these survivors have faced. But really quickly, I know we're kind of all over the place with this, but that's the point of this, is to have the unfiltered conversations and the unedited and the raw conversation, because I believe strongly in advocating and giving the voice to those who do not have a voice or that don't reach those national headlines, because our mainstream media in the United States is complicit in silence and not amplifying the stories of what's happening to my mom with her Medicaid, what's happening to the veterans that are unhoused on our streets every single day and that die by suicide, statistically speaking, one every 22 seconds. And for our Supreme Court of the United States to argue on this upcoming Tuesday, so October 7th, does Colorado's conversion therapy ban violate free speech? This is an article that was written in SCOTUS blog earlier this month. I know it's only the 5th, but the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments Tuesday, October 7th in Childs versus Salazar, which concerns a challenge to Colorado's ban on conversion therapy, treatment intended to change a client's sexual orientation or gender identity for young people. A therapist by the name of Kaylee Childs in Colorado Springs and a practicing Christian argues that the ban violates her right to free speech because it imposes a gag order on counselors. So, in the United States, we have the U.S. Constitution, we have the First Amendment, which also allows for free speech, but it also allows for freedom of expression. Please enlighten me how freedom of religion, freedom of speech violates her right to not harm others. And conversion therapy has been debunked, discredited by every single psychological organization. Please enlighten me how her free speech is being limited because she's trying to force her religious beliefs onto other people by saying, you can't be like this because my religion says so. As a progressive Christian myself, this is not the Christian way. What we are seeing nationally is not the Christian way. This is, and then you said it best, this is not what Jesus would be doing, and this is not what God would be doing. Literally, this is not what they would be doing at all. They actually advocated against this. They advocated for the poor, not for the billionaires, not for the top 1%. Government is supposed to work for the people. The people are supposed to have the power.
That's correct.
And whenever I get out and I talk in the community, or, you know, I interview people that are doing the work on the ground, I feel so grounded and I feel so, you know, I it's all the bullshit is really worth it. Whenever you're around people, and then we have a conversation starting in the United States around restorative justice. And there's a group out of Houston, Texas that is called Restorative Houston. And they bring community members, typically it's like teens or, you know, like younger people. They sit in a circle and they talk about the issues that are going on within the community and they bounce ideas off each other. And a lot of the times they don't bring social media or, you know, like have like phones. So they're just sitting and having like raw conversations about what their communities are facing. And it's a part of conflict resolution, but it's also an alternative to the criminal justice system. Because we know that the systems are working exactly how they were designed. Because how can a system be broken? Yes. How can a system be broken when it's working exactly how it was designed? To hurt people like my mom being a disabled woman, to people like me being a queer, non-binary advocate for change. These systems are working exactly how they were designed. To harm people, especially the most marginalized and the most oppressed. Whenever,
and I would say too, Zachary, also that this is just all the unhealed stuff in our country, all the stuff that has never been talked about. I mean, Trump has just kind of opened the door for that. He's kind of opened for all the shit to come forward that has never been sorted, never been dealt with. And so when I see what's going on, I just think to myself, my God, we've never sorted racism. We've never sorted homophobia. We've never sorted Zionism. We've never sorted any of these things in our country. It doesn't mean that there aren't people who have tried or are doing things. Mm-hmm. It just means the main fabric of America, it's never reconciled those issues. We still live on stolen land and it's our land. It's like, oh my God, like even just if you look at the land in general, mm-hmm. I mean, without it, it's like, wait. So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Ellen, I want to say thank you for the work that you do and for grounding me today, because I learned so much just from, you know, hearing you speak and hearing different perspectives. And you have a very intersectional approach to the work that you do. And I guess my last question for you is, if there was somebody to message you that was searching for healing, what would you recommend? And obviously healing is individual. It's an individual approach. But if they're looking for ways to begin their journey of healing, what would you say and why?
Well, I think I wouldn't sugarcoat it. That would be the first thing I would say. I would not say that the healing journey is going to be easy. They're not going to receive from me like, well, if you just do this, you're going to be healed. No problem. I'm going to let them know that there's going to be rises and falls and twists and turns and ups and downs to it. But I think the biggest thing would be for people to know that there actually are places that are available. And it can be from looking online to looking in libraries. There's a lot you can find in libraries. And I would encourage people to begin to look around, go online, look for different places. But I would also let them know to not settle. Don't settle with like you might see something that you like and it's like, oh, I want to go try that. But don't settle. Like read up on things. Begin to be informed, you know, a little bit with what's happening in the healing sectors with people. And know that it's not going to be easy, but know that it is doable, that other people have crossed this path too. Other people have gone forward. There are lots of resources that are out there. Don't buy the lie that, you know, all the resources are being taken away. There are places and I would even lead, I mean, because there's like a balance, because I think not everybody will return to the church. Some people will be completely, you know, become atheist and go do their own thing and leave the church completely, or just not even do that. And that's fine too. But I would encourage people to find community. I think that that's one of the biggest things to do, is find where people have the same heart and mind. And because of the way technology is, the way that you can find things online. So I think that would be what I would tell people. And I mean, I have resources too. So like if people want to reach out to me, they can. I have, you know, resources in different places that I can pump people or, you know, help people through different things. So yeah, that's what I would say. I would say it's not going to be easy, but it's doable. You can do it.
Absolutely. Ellen, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I greatly appreciate you. Oh. And is there anything else you would like to share? Anything else you'd like to say? I mean, you have brought us to church and ourselves.
I don't know about that. But you know, I just want people to really know that they're loved. Mm-hmm. You're so loved.
Mm-hmm. And you said it best earlier. Where is the love? Where is the humanity? Where is the compassion? It's mm-hmm. still, we won't have it unless we find it within ourselves. And that is the reality.
Yeah. And it's good you said that, because that's where I was going, actually. Way to go, Zach. So, but yeah, in the area of the healing, it is going within. It is sitting with yourself and looking within yourself. And, you know, we tolerate what we allow, what we keep, we tolerate it. And I know that from this point on, that people are going to start to really not tolerate some things. And when you feel the lack of toleration, that's a damn good place to be, because that's when it'll move you. That's when you'll start to, you know, look around for different avenues or look for different places. So don't be afraid of like if the stirring after this podcast ends and people go off and do some things, and I won't keep going on here, but don't be afraid if you start to feel like, oh, I'm angry, man. I'm kind of fired up from this thing. I'm angry. I want to do something about this. That's a good place to be, because anger can be very empowering. Anger can move us forward into the healing that is needed. And that can cause you to look for community, cause you to dig your heels in and say, I want something different for my life. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Ellen, you take care, my friend, okay?
You got it.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. No problem.